Welcome to episode 72 of Sound Out Wave, the first podcast to reach planet Earth from Cybertron. I'm Nell, and I'm great at Transformers.
And I'm Greg, and I'm getting better at Transformers.
And this week is our last annual stand with the Rectacular. Oh my god, we're here.
We did it.
We made it.
A last stand of the Rectar.
We made
it. Can't wait to find out about those Junkions, all
They're
that
back.
History.
They have brought tons of trash with them.
It's going to get trashy, folks.
There's going to be some trash talk, that's for sure. Because it's the Wreckers.
It's the Wreckers. They're here to take out the trash, Rectar.
Yeah.
You're infringing on intellectual property.
This is the story about the stand down between Rectar and the Wreckers. But no, really, this is obviously this. We were just discussing there's some hype about this show. People are excited about this, and everybody's excited about it.
It sounds like for some reason people enjoy this comic book.
For whatever reason, this is a big one with people.
Seems to hold a special place in people's collections.
Yeah. So right at the top here, here's what I realized we should have done. so sorry, everybody. Here's what we should have done. We should have put out the call last week and been like, hey, we're going to be, and this is on me. This isn't on you. So when I say we, I mean, I'm a dum-dum, and this is what I should have done.
Well, it's great for you to take that bullet, but this is clearly my fault now. I really was the one who,
I'm taking this hit. Don't worry. Don't let them turn on you. But really, I feel like we should have put it out there, put out that call. That like, hey, we're going to be reading and discussing Last Stand of the Wreckers and kind of take questions, if that, I don't know how to put it, but like almost take some audience participation, if you will, and just be like, what do you want us to discuss specifically? Because here at the top of the hour, we will say we're not going to do a let's read because that would take, I mean, it would be awesome, but it would
probably
take us about 5 hours.
It would be like you were listening to an audiobook.
Sure. It would be like a live recording of us and you guys just like hearing us go beat by beat through this book, which would
it
take
be
a very
like
long
a
time.
Marathon that we were doing for charity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which, I mean, maybe someday. But in this instance, we're doing more of a, you called it more like a book club.
Oprah Winfrey book club.
Yeah,
her book of the month is Transformers: Last Stand of the Wreckers.
She just is so highly recommended.
It spoke to her.
It really did, and I see
it
why.
Reached her on a level that only works by Maya Angelou had.
Mm-hmm.
Works by
mm-hmm.
other authors that Oprah enjoys.
Which, I mean, and now you've read it. You know she's not wrong. You get where it's coming from. I'm sure.
I think it's safe and not controversial to say that this book makes Maya Angelou's entire oeuvre look like dog shit.
That's from Greg's book club, everyone.
That's a direct quote from Oprah Winfrey.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's
right.
From Oprah herself.
Damn,
that is some high esteem here.
There you go.
So we're doing more of an overall discussion of the comic itself and the extras that were published in the hardcover edition, or the trade edition. And so it was in that I realized we should have, like, if there were certain things people wanted us to discuss, just because by nature, I'm sure there are things that we're just not even going to touch on that somebody probably wants us to discuss. And I know how that feels. And so I am sorry that we're probably going to miss some things that people really love and really want to discuss. And so that's where I realized we should have kind of put out a call and seen, you know, if people had specific instances that they wanted us to touch upon. And you know what? We could potentially still do that.
Well, here's my advice to anyone. If we miss anything, if we don't cover something to your specificity, if you're interested in something else, then get your own podcast, you jerk.
There it is.
What are you doing?
There it is. Just
no, yeah,
make
just
a response
let us know,
podcast no. to us. But yeah, there's a good chance we don't know exactly how it's going to pan out from here. Of course, this week it's just Last Stand and all of the extras. So we're doing all of it. We don't know exactly when Sins of the Wreckers is going to happen. I would love it. I saw somebody mention we better have Nick Roche on this show, which I would have loved. But I'm hoping, what I was actually hoping was maybe after Sins, we could get him on and discuss both sets of books. So sure. We'll see. So there's still going to be time to discuss the Wreckers. Just in this first episode.
Right. Yeah. It's going to be compressed. And I'm going to let you know now, we're probably like, we won't skip over anything, sure. But we probably won't address directly anything that doesn't directly involve Whirl. Like, if there's any scenes that Whirl's not in, we'll just kind of gloss over them.
Right. So when we wrap in 10 minutes, right. It's been real, everybody. But yeah, so with all of that out of the way, now that we've discussed all of it and have already said there's more to come, but for now, let's get into this. I'm excited that we're here.
I'm excited that we are here as well. I have so many questions.
Yeah. And
I think it would be good to start off with one that
please do. Yeah.
Is something that requires extensive research and is probably not super answerable.
I hope it's a real
question. But it is a real question. So this, as it says in the front cover, mm-hmm. takes place before Transformers number one. What I'm asking for here is context. When did this come out? What was the state of the Transformers universe at this time?
Perfect.
And so on.
Yes. Okay. So the state of Last Stand of the Wreckers, this becomes part of the story too. They're talking about this surge of the Decepticons and everything. This is about circa All Hail Megatron. Parts of this are. Because it does kind of hop between times. Sometimes it'll be like 3 years ago, or it'll be like a year ago. Those are specifically when we're looking at Overlord in Garrus 9. But yeah, so what happened was All Hail Megatron happened, which was this great push by the Decepticons. Obviously, it's in the name. The Decepticons get the upper hand. And it was a very big moment in the IDW universe where an Autobot, and I mean, most people know everything that happened, or some people know. I don't want to say most people.
So to read this book, you really need to have read All Hail.
You don't have to have. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Like, unless you read it and were completely just out of your element here. But I had faith that it would be okay. And I'll address a little bit more of that here in a bit, too. But yeah, so All Hail Megatron happened, which was this great kind of Decepticons turning the tide. Like, they were kind of getting the upper hand, and that's why we have this push on Garrus 9, which we see was started just as, like, a Decepticon raiding party. And it is only because of Overlord taking over that things go so badly in Garrus 9.
Right. Yeah, it opens with this Skyquake guy being well, I'm kind of in charge here, and Overlord is like, that's super cute.
Like, you're adorable. And he, yeah.
Right, he gets super blown up.
Oh, it's rough, everybody. But yes, so this is about the All Hail Megatron era, which All Hail Megatron led to the start of Transformers ongoing, which is why this is before Transformers 1. Does that track?
That makes sense. Yes, that firmly establishes it within the timeline.
Yes, and of course, ongoing was prior to our podcast with the death of Optimus Prime and onward to Robots in Disguise and More Than Meets the Eye. So
that makes sense. That definitely lays out. And then we also have in the bonus material, mm-hmm. There are two prose stories that James wrote.
Yes.
And maybe there's way more bonus material than just those two, but I think those are relevant to what we're saying right now.
Very much.
One does lay out a lot of, like, okay, how do we get to the beginning of Last Stand of the Wreckers? And who are these guys? Let's jump around a whole bunch and also introduce this concept of the Shimmer, which, spoiler alert for everybody who didn't read, is...
Springer.
Oh, what's his name?
Springer.
Springer, yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be super bad with names. This is going to be a lot like when we met the Scavengers.
Sure.
Where I'm like, if I ever meet these guys again, I'll know all their names, but I don't know any of them other than Cup and Perceptor right now.
Yeah, totally fair. I think but that that's, no, yes. that's, yes, there's, yeah, no, there's a lot in these books. Even rereading it, I kind of made a joke tweet and I was like, oh yeah, this is a little bit brutal, isn't it? It's,
yes.
It's so not that's, an easy book to read, everybody.
Well, that's another thing we can discuss.
Sure.
Probably at great length is this is, it, that was my reaction as well. I'm like, damn, a lot of dudes are getting fucking torn to shit up in here. There's a lot of pink blood everywhere.
Yeah.
It's like Danganronpa. But I realize that makes sense because this is not only about Overlord, who is this sort of, you know, sadistic whatever, but all of the other Transformers books have been post-war. This is firmly ensconced in the war.
Yes. And not only that, a very heavy moment.
Yes. Exactly.
In the war. I mean, I guess the actual event of the Wreckers going to Garris 9 is a couple years. I guess not. But this is very much it's a very high stakes point, which is still, it's still either, it's like the fallout of all Hail Megatron. And, which of course, yes, is the Autobots trying to take back what they had.
Right.
All of the ground that they had lost during All Hail. So it's still firmly, like you said, yeah, this is wartime. And everything we have covered has been, more or less peaceful.
If not peaceful, then at least post-war.
Yes.
Which is an important distinction. I mean, there's...
Absolutely.
You don't see... You see a lot of sort of emotional brutality and a lot of...
Yes.
It's not to say there isn't violence and things, but there's... You know, war is hell, as someone not as smart as me once said. I think that opening it in this style where it is very over the top and very like, you know, it's like the opening of Band of Brothers where people are just getting shot to heck.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a way to establish that, even though I imagine, you know, I'm sure they weren't thinking, well, the way we'll do this is we'll make it super violent so it'll contrast with future stories, which won't be as violent because maybe some guy in the future will come back and read this. And
I mean, you say that, but James was on this book, so.
That's true. It does work very well in that context, I would say.
It certainly does. And I just want to, and this will come up, I'm sure, a couple times as we discuss these books. For what it's worth, I do want to toss out here right at the start, just a reminder for everybody, this was at least a year before, like around a year before James was on the ongoing books. And like, and this will certainly come up specifically in like the extras, but I just want everybody to remember that. Cause the James came in to ongoing near the end to prep for, to at least partially prep for he and John, everybody prepping for Robots in Disguise and More Than Meets the Eye, taking their two branches into the next arc, if you will. And this was at least a year out before then, or at least, you know, some of the books were, it was roughly a year out before any of that groundwork was starting to get laid as well. So that's just a very interesting thing to keep in mind. And because I think that that's what was intriguing to me going through this. And what I had in the back of my mind was that, like, I'm rereading this book. But if somebody like you is new to this and you who've read now, you're completely caught up in this current era of storyline that we have going.
Right.
So much of this stuff already makes sense to you. Whereas at the time, I have to say, especially again in the extras, a lot of this was just like, yeah, I'm not going to question it. I don't know what's going on.
These people seem to know who these people are. I'll trust them.
Sure. Why not? I don't know what this means. I'm going with it. This is a great story. Well, I'm interested to hear about, to like discuss a little bit more of that.
Right. That's a great point. That's exactly what I wanted to move on is, it was not until the very end of this book that I was reading the extras stuff and it says, oh, so as everyone reading this knows, which I don't, we were playing with the idea that the Wreckers are this team that's replaceable and there's several iterations of the Wreckers.
Yes.
And these are all no-name characters from European toys.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I just assumed, like I do with every Transformer character I meet, that this character has some extensive backstory that's been developed over decades of comics. And
sure.
I am just not privy to it because I'm new here.
Sure.
But no, I was surprised to find that, like, pretty much the only people in this who are established are, like, Overlord and, you know, maybe Cup.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because that's exactly what we should be doing, is kind of discussing the characters that we're dealing with here. Because, of course, yeah, our new recruits... Right. Are that's who specifically they were like, let's just get some like Marvel UK or like specifically European toy characters,
right?
That don't have any sort of nobody like
that are they're free range, yeah. The names may have been heard, but there's nothing right. That's been it's totally blank canvas,
yeah. So, this is kind of the start of then now what James has like. Turned into a total weapon, which is taking right, characters yes. That don't really have the
what a secret boon that is to have this extensive backlog of just toys and character designs and names and nothing else, like
just
floating around.
And I don't know if this, because I have like the physical hard copy in front of me, and that's what I was reading. And we did buy the version that is on Comixology, but there's a foreword where they talk about, you know, using these characters and the fact that they knew, like, you know, that the new recruits are essentially red shirts, but they right. Wanted you to care whether or not they died, which, bravo, like, you did it. And obviously, we know now that is something that... At least James continued into More Than Meets the Eye, because I know that's absolutely. Come up on our show before.
Right. And it was the same thing back then, is everyone yeah. Who was getting on The Lost Light, I'm like, okay, I guess this is the guy.
Sure. Because you as a brand new reader, as a brand new, right. You know, person brand new to Transformers, it was like, you don't know the fact that like me going into it, I was like, I kind of have an idea of who Brainstorm is, but like, I don't care. Like, I don't know.
I just
assumed. Whereas now I'm like, I swear to God, if you do anything to Brainstorm, I'm going to be very upset about it, which like really brilliant and just terrible moves, but well, so well done.
Back to your other point, the idea of, okay, we have these new characters, mm-hmm. They're going to be in the shit, we need to make people care about them fast,
yeah.
The Bullets story is a really good way of doing
which is so interesting, because it didn't come out until the trade.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah. Like, because I was reading Last Stand as it was coming out, issue by issue, and it wasn't until a couple months later, because I think Bullets first appeared in, like, September, and I believe Last Stand, like, the proper comics were coming out in, like, spring to summer. So Bullets, as it wasn't even a part of the story until a couple months after the fact, if I'm correct. I could be wrong on those dates. I know I did not see it until after all of the comics month by month had come out. And it made you care so much more. But I think this is where it's interesting, because I think so much of it comes down to, as it normally does, just the method of writing. Like, Nick and James give such life and such depth to all of these characters immediately that you get a sense of all of them. Even if
right.
We don't know who Rotorstorm is, I was in love with that dude. I was like, he's great. I love this guy.
Well, and that was one of the things I asked early in when we started the show was... Mm-hmm. Like, why is this book revered so highly? Why are people tweeting at us right now, years later? And it's because what you had said to me is certainly not for the very first time, but this was one of, at the time, sort of rare instances yeah. of, okay, let's really explore who these people are.
Right.
And put them in situations that are high drama, high conflict, and sort of bring out what is unique about them and what we can develop.
Certainly.
And it does
with
a very good job.
Such a brutality. It really, really does.
Oh, boy, it does.
Like, it is... I have to wonder, just a quick sidebar, how much, like, if Nick was just sitting there with, like, glee, like, all this shit he puts him through. Like, you sicko.
Just ripping people apart.
Yeah. How sick were you thinking through all of this? Hopefully he's listening. But yeah, because even, okay, so here's some setting as far as I'm concerned. Like, when Last Stand was coming out, And I've mentioned this before, Nick was on my radar. Nick was like the first IDW creator on my radar because I really loved, I was initially drawn in because of his artwork and I really liked the way that he drew everybody. But then, you know, certain stories of his, I was like, oh, I like the way he writes too. And so when I saw that he was doing a Wreckers book, I was excited because obviously, like, I like Springer and I like Cup and I like Perceptor. And so I was like, oh, cool. This is going to be awesome. What a fool I was. But I'm
too
kidding.
Bad it sucked.
Too bad it was the worst. But so where was I even going with this line of thinking?
Well, you brought up something that's interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And how long have the Wreckers been a thing? What is this book introducing? Like, there's a lot of concepts in this book, and there's one that really interests and excites me that we can get to after this. But just as a sort of base, like, how were the Wreckers a cartoon thing? Were they
the Wreckers comic thing? Were introed in the UK Marvel comics.
Okay,
so like they've been a thing for a very, very long time.
And the core concept has always been these are the sort of
they're like the A team. They're like
the last resort squad.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I would put it. People may disagree with that. People may see them in certain ways. But yeah, this is I'm most familiar with IDW's version of the Wreckers, but it is, yeah, this like, so there's a good chance that this is the, I would imagine, just because of at least what this book gives us and what we've seen so far, this is, you know, they're very brutal. It is very last ditch effort.
It's a shock and awe SEAL Team 6 kind of squad.
Even in the extras, they call them the third faction, which I love. I think that's great.
That you actually hit exactly the thing that I was looking for is, so that's something that was super interesting to me, and it's something mm-hmm. that is definitely addressed in the comic, but almost seems to be addressed more in the backup material.
Uh-huh.
That's a really interesting idea. That
for
so
sure.
I come from X-Men, and mm-hmm. I've mentioned that a whole bunch before.
Wait,
the X-Men,
what?
Yeah.
Who are the X-Men?
Well, that's a good question these days.
Ooh.
But back when I was reading the X-Men comics, mm-hmm. there was a group called X-Force, which was Wolverine and a whole bunch of people who like can kill, and mm-hmm. they are sent out to deal with threats that would like eliminate the mutant race, and they're secret, and you send them in because they will do the dirty
before.
Work.
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Probably so, in regards to the Wreckers, because that
yes,
tracks.
Yeah. So the idea of the Wreckers being this sort of third faction mm-hmm. is really interesting, because I would still consider X-Force like, oh, that's an X-Men team. Like,
sure.
The X-Men has a bunch of teams. There's the New Mutants. There's whatever.
And like the Wreckers are Autobots, but at the same time. Ooh.
Right. It's Autobots who seem to be dealing with. It doesn't even seem like morally gray stuff, though. So I guess I'm wondering, like, the idea of a third faction very much intrigues me. I don't know that I buy the idea that the Wreckers are that third faction.
Here's where I will, and this goes to the extras. So hopefully everybody listening has read the extras or is okay with us discussing them. If you aren't, pause it now. Go read all of the extras. Go buy the book. Have Nick sign it for you like I did. But in the extras, they actually bring up specifically the fact that by the time, and it's from Springer's kind of point of view, that, you know, he joins up with the Wreckers, and during his time there and before Impactor, all the stuff with Pova, which obviously we're going to get to that, it just was getting a little bit more brutal and a little bit more brutal. And like to the point where the Wreckers were just like over time taking a little
right.
bit extra liberties, being a little bit more.
Yeah, I remember this.
Right. So that's where I do give this whole, like, I give reverence to this idea of them being a third faction, because basically to me what that means is that it's right in the comic. The fact that Ultra Magnus is like, I'm gonna go and pretend I didn't have that much to do with this. Like, the fact that Ultra Magnus is like, you're my dudes, but also,
right,
if I see too much, I have to report
recuse
things.
Myself.
Yes. So he is going to step away from whatever they have to do. So that's where I like that idea. Like, it's not a literal third faction, but it's certainly an idea where, like, upstanding sure. Autobots, or at least Autobots like Ultra Magnus and like Prowl, will be like, they're ours, but if shit gets real...
They're Splinter Cells. We can denounce their existence yes. at any time.
Right. Like, they are... It's a suicide mission kind of task force.
And that was one of the lines in the backup material. Sorry, people, we are super focusing on that. That was one of the lines that was really interesting to me is mm-hmm. someone, I forget who it was, but they approach Cup and say, hey, I want to be on the list for Wreckers. And
it was Springer does, yeah.
Yes, yeah, it was Springer. Yeah, they're going through Springer's sort of backstory. And he's saying, like, I want to be on the list for the Wreckers. And James makes it known that that's the equivalent of not only saying that, like, I will die for the Autobot cause, that I am looking to die for the Autobot cause.
Yeah. And that's what's so... Right. And I think that that's part of it, too. That's what also plays into this whole, quote-unquote, third faction, not, like, Autobots, but extra. Like, you're extra right. Autobots. Because... You know what you're getting into if you are willingly joining the Wreckers. Because, and they say it straight up in this material, there are very few ways you leave the Wreckers. One, and I think this is all actually in one teeny part of Zero Point that we are discussing in this past, like, 5 minutes. And it is, you are either discharged or you get dementia or you die.
Your and, body like, bag.
Yeah, like, those are the ways, which is why we have people, to bring it back to Whirl, he was discharged. He was right, dishonorably yes. discharged, because that's not a none of them are glamorous ways to go. And that's the thing to take away here, is that when you are joining the Wreckers, you know it's not going to end well.
When does that happen? When does
Whirl? Okay, yeah. So yeah, let's sidebar. Let's talk about Whirl. So, I don't even remember exactly in which books that this is a thing. And it's a potential that this comes up in Sins. I can't remember. But regardless, you know who Whirl is a little bit. You're familiar with him, at least
He's
slightly.
The purple one with the horns.
That's the one. Well done.
Yeah, love him.
He's total prince. But so what actually happens is now you're more familiar with Roadbuster, who I love very much. And they mention in the extras, they talk about the fact that the reason Springer is bringing on new recruits is because he needs to replace four people in the Wreckers. And Whirl and Roadbuster are each one of them. He says that Roadbuster is working on a Spark Eater thing. And it's not the Spark Eater that we know from our experience
right,
more in
than
More Than Meets the Eye. It's a weapon or what have you that Roadbuster is designing to kind of destroy a spark. And this may have actually come up in More Than Meets the Eye. I'm so sorry, everybody. This is a little disjointed. But suffice it to say, Roadbuster was creating the Spark Eater. And Whirl tried to use it on Springer's comatose body. So Roadbuster, that is why Roadbuster put Whirl up for dismissal from the Wreckers, because okay. he turned on Springer. So, and that's the thing. And we this actually was part of More Than Meets the Eye, that they mentioned that, like, all it takes is one Wrecker to say, I don't want him on the team anymore. And that's it. You're done. So the fact that Whirl tried to kill Springer in his comatose state.
A minor detail, really.
but so Roadbuster, his reaction was, I refuse to serve with this person. So Whirl was dismissed. And that
all
was,
I'm saying
that
is who hasn't tried to kill Springer in a comatose state?
maybe just Roadbuster. No. But so there you go. It is, in fairness to Whirl, because of course we do care very much about Whirl on this podcast. It all kind of goes, which he plays a bit of a role here in the comic and then in the extra stories. We all know how Whirl is. He's a little extra.
He's rambunctious.
He's a little rambunctious.
He's precocious.
So you could, if you wanted to, you could probably spin it and say, well, he knew that Springer was dying slowly, so let's just finish the job.
Make him die quickly.
Yeah. But so there you go. So that's why Whirl used to be a Wrecker, is no longer, and why it's not. He still wears that badge. Not literally, but he still wears that Wrecker, hey, I'm a Wrecker, or I used to be. Because it is. It's something to brag about. I mean, he's still alive. That's noteworthy. Well done, babe.
There's a very small moment in a Marvel comic that I greatly enjoy where mm-hmm. a guy accidentally... There's a robbery and a guy tries to stop this guy and he stops the wrong guy. He was being pursued by a superhero and he's like, wait, you're the good guy? He's like, I'm Rage. I was in the Avengers and the New Warriors. and that made me think of that. Whirl would be like, I was in the Avengers and the New Warriors.
You guys, I was in both.
I don't know if you've heard this. I've been a Wrecker, so...
Oh, God. And that's what I do love is that we have seen him. He's ready to bring yeah. it up whenever.
He absolutely
pull out that card, be like, Wrecker, hi. And it is, it's a badge of honor. It really is. Maybe not being discharged, obviously, but for what it's worth, another sidebar, or maybe even just a new path to go down, even Perceptor. I do love these because I'm even reading this, I was like, oh yeah, Perceptor's hot as hell in these books.
Perceptor's hot as hell in these books. No getting around that.
Here's a quick background with me and Perceptor. I've always loved Perceptor, even when he was a fucking dork in the 80s. I was always like, I like him. He's cute. He's a microscope. He's just a little science nerd. I like him. I'm willing to defend Perceptor. And then these books came out. Well, and the thing that kind of led into this was Spotlight Drift. Perceptor gets very, very badly wounded in it. And it kind of shifts his focus. And from there, he now has become this more stoic, this more badass version of Perceptor that you and newer readers will know. But once upon a time, he was this talkative doofus who
he was a geek.
Yeah, he was a total geek. That's still cute. But I do remember when these books were coming out, and I think it's even in the first one, maybe, he hangs upside down out of their shuttle, and I remember being like, oh girl. Shit. That's real good. This is nice. Yeah, he gets pretty hot after Spotlight Drift. Perceptor kind of shifts gears and becomes this little hottie sniper that we now all know.
He percepts.
But yeah, so yeah, again, he was a big name. Cup, Springer, all big
Prowl
names.
Gets offhandedly mentioned.
Prowl is sort of, well, of course, even reading this, I was like, oh boy, this isn't going to help Prowl's stand out with Greg at all. It's
what
just going to get worse.
What Let's a card. Just... What a.
It's not going to get any better. At least not anytime soon, as far as our show is concerned and what we are covering thus far. But yeah, we have Perceptor, we have, so let's go down the roster really quickly. We have, Springer, who's leading the Wreckers at this point. Ultra Magnus, who's sort of the Wrecker dad a little bit.
He's, my mm-hmm. understanding and sort of feeling is that he is the supervisor, the chief.
Yeah.
Who says, you Wreckers play fast and loose with the rules, but gosh darn it, you get the job done.
Yeah.
Who is appointed by the Autobots and he has to watch over them to keep them in line.
Well, he's the dual enforcer of the Tyrest Accord, so of course.
Exactly. There you go.
Of course. So yes, perfect. So we do have a Magnus cameo a little bit. Springer's leading. We have Cup on the team. We have Perceptor. We have I always call them twins. I guess they're not literally, but Twin Twist and Top Spin.
Yeah.
The Jump Starters is their actual term.
First off, anyone who is familiar with the reality show Big Brother will know all about Twin Twist.
Oh, what?
There's a dumb thing Big Brother has done in a couple seasons where there's someone in the house, but the secret is they have a twin and they switch out every other day.
Oh my God. That sounds so dumb. What the
it's
fuck?
It's super duper dumb. I love it. So, yes, there's, I didn't know whether they were twins, whether, like, they're related in some capacity, yes?
Sure. I mean, that's how I always thought. I mean, they explain it in these books that they are a branched spark. So in my mind, it was a little bit like the Lamborghinis, who, of course, at this point, IDW was still not calling twins, which bothered me so much. You all know this. but so to me, they were, as far as Transformers go, as far as Cybertronian, life forms go, I was always convinced that, yeah, they are in some form related. But yes, they're called the Jumpstarters. And, so Topspin and Twin Twist, Springer Cup, Perceptor, Topspin, Twin Twist. And then we have, the recruits, our new babes. We have Guzzle, and we have Pyro, we have Rotorstorm, and we have Lil Iron Fist.
And you're forgetting a pivotal character.
Yeah. Oh, Verity. Of course, Verity. We got our girl Verity here.
Which is another question that I wanted to ask.
Sure, so, I figured you would.
Yes. Obviously, we've encountered humans. Like, we've met mm-hmm. Spike, and we kind of met Spike's blonde friend, who I forget the name of.
Oh, yeah. No, Jimmy. That's his... Okay. Yeah. No, that's actually perfect. I'm glad you brought up Jimmy, because he was Verity's friend.
Okay. Perfect. Good.
Yes.
And then, obviously, we've met Marissa and people like that.
Yes.
But... So Verity, I haven't met, although I know Verity is important because
yes.
Ultra Magnus's holoform yeah. is Verity, correct?
Yes. He cares about Verity. She is an important human to him.
She calls him Uncle Magnus.
She calls him Uncle Magnus. It's very cute. So at the beginning of kind of the entire IDW storyline, at the start of the publishing of these Transformers books, we had I call it the Asian period, because it was like Devastation, Infiltration, blah, 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 blah. And that had these three human kids in it, and it was Verity, Jimmy, and Hunter. And Hunter, at this point, oh God, I don't know if she would know this by now, Hunter's dead by this point. Bad things happen to Hunter, poor Hunter. And then Jimmy, because of the stuff that happens to Hunter and just because of what he's dealt with, that is why Jimmy's a little bit like, I'm going to follow Spike. But he's still like a little bit cool with Transformers. Like, he's not as quick to anger as Spike is, because like he's been around Autobots before. And Verity, and we see this in the extras, she just takes off. She just pieces out and is like, Hunter, Jimmy, love you, bye. And she goes with Ultra Magnus. That's what she chooses to do. She doesn't want to be on Earth anymore. Who could blame her? And so that's kind of where her story started, was back at the start of IDW. And this, these three kids having to kind of get wrapped up in the whole Autobot-Decepticon conflict that has come to Earth. So, yes, by the end of that, she chooses to go with Magnus. And that is why she is this... And they call her straight up. They're like, you're a stowaway. Like, what is this? but yeah, and we even see, yeah, she's a bit inspired by Ultra Magnus. She cares about him very much, too. Obviously, they have a very cute relationship. I like it. But yeah, so she's kind of our little bonus wrecker.
Right. And yeah. And she even takes after Magnus, and she's like, I want cool armor, and puts on giant sock and boppers.
Yeah, she has giant sock and boppers.
And also occasionally like crazy
wheel shoes.
Roller wheels.
Yeah. I've toyed with the idea of cosplaying Verity and have been like, I don't want to build stuff. It would really just be me in like little shorts and a like sports bra. Like, and who, that could just be me hanging out.
Well, that's, you got to get anything. The tattoo as well.
Which is a little nod to Hunter. He would wear like an alien shirt. So like, that's her little leg. That was my
there
friend.
There you go.
It's real cute. So there you go. Once I add that tattoo, that little alien tattoo, people will be like, oh, I get it.
Now
she's Verity.
I know.
Or she's Ultra Magnus.
Could be.
I would happily be like, I may look like Verity Carlo. I'm actually cosplaying Ultra Magnus. Thank you.
Then you get to kiss Megatron.
Oh, hell yeah. Sign me up. Okay, that's what I'm going to do. Look out. TFCon, everybody.
Perfect. Make it happen.
Mm-hmm. We're on it.
So what do you think she brings to the book? Because we see her interacting with these guys a lot and sort mm-hmm. of bringing up the idea of like humans are different and people sort of learning lessons from the fact that, oh, humans are different. But what role is she filling as a wrecker, I guess is what I'm asking.
Okay. Well, before I answer that, let me answer your question with a question. Do you feel like she is not bringing something to the table?
No, I okay. have an answer for this. And my answer is, I think she, very importantly, there needs to be someone to pick up the role that Iron Fist leaves behind of, like, there's something here that needs to be said and shared and put out there.
Yes.
And he really likes the Wreckers and he wants to do that. And Verity writes the last chapter of the Wrecker guides or whatever, yeah. right?
So that's her literal very important role, is that at the very end, in actually in the bonus material, like, we see at the very end of the comics, she is writing Life Persists, and it's this really beautiful moment. But in the extras, we see she's got that stuff that Prowl wants to hide.
Right.
That's a huge thing that she's got.
The Watchmen ending.
Uh-huh. So, which you can imagine probably plays a role later.
Can't believe they've never addressed it.
They've never. This. P.S. Sidebar on that. It was 5 years at least between the end of this before it was mentioned that we were going to get a next part of the Wreckers installment. Just to put that in perspective to everybody, I was in the Comic-Con panel room for IDW when they announced this. I was sitting next to my friend Meg, and she was not paying. I forget, she was distracted by something, and of course I'm like listening to these people I admire and some of my friends up there on the IDW Hasbro panel, and of course they were talking about Transformers, and they have like these screens in the room that kind of like, you know, they show like, sure, oh, here yeah. are covers to books, and like, oh, new toys coming out or what have you. And they showed a shot, and it was Springer, and I like sat like ramrod straight in my chair, and I just like remember like breathing the word Springer, and Meg went, what? And I was like, and it was just this moment of like quick, just like super fast moments where I'm like, why are you looking at me? Look at the screen. Springer's right there. Because she had been bitching about the lack of Springer material since the end of this set of books. So the fact that I was seeing it and she wasn't, I was like, I swear to God, he was just on the screen. I am not losing my mind. And yeah, that was them introducing the books that were about to come out for Sins of the Wreckers. And it was a very, very exciting moment. I was very excited to be there in that room. And because like I said, it was a minute. It was a hot, hot minute between Last Stand and Sins. So, but that out of the way. So, right, it's the fact that we see Verity with this very precious, this very important, the fact that so many bots were killed and kind of slaughtered for this, you know, were sacrificed sure. for this information that Prowl wanted to keep hidden so badly because he's kind of a son of a fuck sometimes.
Prowl?
I know, surprising to you. You who loves him so dearly.
Just seems like
right, it seems out of character. Yeah. But surprise, Greg, I hate to tell you this. Sometimes Prowl's not all that sweet.
I can't allow you to besmirch my mental image of
I'm sorry to be
perfect
to
cinnamon
do this.
Roll Prowl. So my mm-hmm. follow-up question is then, I can't imagine it's a positive, uplifting answer. What happens to Verity? Because I don't think I've seen her since.
Well, you know what? We'll just kind of leave that because...
Okay, okay. That's fair.
And I don't want to, like... I'm not trying to be coy or anything. I do feel like we'll get to Sins very quickly. Or at least in a relatively quick amount of time.
Okay.
Following this. Just because the reason we're even doing this one right now, not like I have been looking for a chance to do Last Stand of the Wreckers. We had this week where no new books were coming out. So if we have another week like this, which we probably will, as we follow our three main titles that we've been now picking up as they come out. And if nothing else, I'm totally fine with also kind of pushing certain like titles into doing two issues in 1 week. So sure. If nothing else, we'll make room. We will make room to discuss the Wreckers further. I promise. This isn't a one and done thing. So we'll see what happens to Verity. She's as far as this is like we see her. We do see her like kind of followed by a police car at the end of this. But yeah,
that's all the answer I need.
Okay, cool.
I'll take it. So there's, I will say, there's clearly a lot of things in here that set up future events,
mm-hmm.
And future things that will be picked up on later in James's writings and such.
Yeah.
It was very, very interesting to me to see Overlord in this, because
right.
in More Than Meets the Eye, he's this, to me, a totally amorphous threat who's like a super like tell don't show, like, oh, this guy's real bad, I promise. But like mm-hmm. the reason they got away with that is because like this was here saying, hey, guess what? Overlord took over a planet and defied Megatron and turned it into his own private like gladiator pit.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And this is where I was so excited to get to discuss this on the show with you, a brand new reader. Because, yeah, at the time of this book, you know, when this came out, it was like, oh, God. And we all learned to, like, fear Overlord. We all learned to be like, oh, God, he's awful. And he's huge and he's scary. And, you know, he does these
terrible
things.
And he's handsome. Got them lips.
So handsome. Those porn lips. Come on. And so, yeah, so by the time More Than Meets the Eye comes about, when, you know, because it was already a mini horror story with, like, Red Alert hearing a voice from the basement saying, kill me on repeat.
Right.
And then when we find out who it is, for those of us who had read Last Stand of the Wreckers, it was like, it was double down on your horror movie. It was like, oh God, why is he still here? Why? And we do learn in this book, you know, they say at the end, they don't kill him. Impactor wants him alive. Impactor wants him to have to stand trial and answer for all of the things that he's done.
Sure.
And now hopefully it actually makes, you know, brings some more clarity to things as far as you are concerned, like just how bad it is, as if you needed any more reason to dislike Prowl. Really, really bad that he convinced Hot Rod, pardon me, oh my God, that he convinced Rodimus to bring Overlord on board this ship. Like, it's just, it's real bad. It's...
Yeah,
like,
you know?
Hopefully that, like, kind of, like, pushes it even further. As if it wasn't bad enough, just being like, oh, God, yeah, that guy's really dangerous. Now that you've seen a little bit more of the extent at this totally unhinged character.
Right, this Caligulan...
Yeah. Like,
crazed despot. I will say, I'm not going to rearticulate my whole Prowl thing.
What?
You know.
I didn't know you had a problem with him.
I mean, my problem with Prowl is that Prowl...
That we don't see enough of him.
Yes, obviously. No, mm-hmm. I mean that, as has been stated, he believes that he can prove that every course of action possible is the best course of action.
Right.
But he can't, because obviously he's done a lot of really dumb shit.
Oh,
that got a lot of people super killed.
Yeah. People who... sorry, Prowl, but, like, as far as these books have been going, nicer, more likable people than you, my sweet darling. I love you, Prowl, but damn. Especially when you do read, like, Bullets and you get a little bit more backstory on these characters. Which, P.S., let's go down one of those roads really quickly.
Sure.
What did you think about... Well, let me ask you this. Which of the Wreckers in these books, which is your fave? And I think that that's fair, because you're going into this with roughly about, give or take, as much info as I had going into this initially on these characters.
Well, it's going to sound weird, but I think my favorite might actually be Iron Fist. I think that...
Okay.
As someone whose plane crashed in the mystic land of Kunlun and learned to harness the power of the immortal Iron Fist, mm-hmm. And got his own Netflix special, I mean, what's not to like?
I did not hear good things about that, so I guess
yeah, it was
there
super bad and super racist.
Like.
I mean, Iron Fist as a character is super racist. I was just trying to do a bit.
Sure.
Gosh, Perceptor, if that's an option, but.
Okay.
I just like Perceptor because, like, oh, I know
yeah.
him.
Sure, sure. He has that going for him.
I did like Iron Fist maybe the best, just because okay. I like the idea of someone who, you know, gets to... Have you ever seen Almost Famous?
I haven't. I don't know
so
how.
This,
I haven't.
It's a movie about this,
my
like, teenager
it.
Who
yeah.
convinces Rolling Stones he's a journalist, and he gets to be, like, an embedded journalist with his,
oh,
like, favorite band.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happens to Iron Fist.
Yeah.
He Almost Famouses. And he's like, You mean I get to be with the Wreckers? Like
I get to chill with these dudes I admire so much.
And just like, oh God, I'm never going to remember that actor's name, whatever. Just like the kid from Almost Famous, he's like, wait a minute, these guys kind of blow.
Right.
Or at least they are not what I thought they were.
Yeah, he gets some more reality with his...
Right, Pova.
Oh my God. Which that's, yeah, we'll hold on to that. We'll get to that next. I was just wondering, cause yeah, you know, they do such a good job in Tangany's second stringers, these red shirts. And
I really like Rotor Storm. I really like Pyro. Yeah. Guzzles got that gun.
Guzzles really cool. And of course they all have their charms and they all have, yeah, these endearing characteristics that just make you like them. And really, like, cause we see obviously we see brutality before the Wreckers even get in. I was so charmed by Rotor Storm. I just loved him. even, you know,
he definitely has the best line in the book. That's for sure. When he says Wreckers combine, that got
it's
me
so
pretty good.
Funny. It's so funny. Yeah, no, Rotor Storm charmed me right away. Which, yeah, I've had the fortune of hanging out with Nick Roche, and I had my book with me, and he was like, well, which one's your favorite? And I said, Ro. So, yeah, he drew a little picture of him for me in the front here. So that's why I wanted to know who your favorite was, just because they really did do such a great job making us care about them before just having awful, awful things happen to these characters. Specifically, and I think I was about to say specifically Pyro. I just, oh God, it's so bad. It's so bad. This poor baby just wanted to be like Optimus Prime.
He wanted to be a cool big boy.
He really did. And then he was just fucking torn apart. But I will say, this is why this can give a little bit of insight when, if you'll remember, and I don't know if you will remember, but way back in More Than Meets the Eye, it's, after they go to Delphi and they pick up Ambulon and First Aid, and after they deal with Pharma and everything, when Ratchet and First Aid are talking on their way back to, the Lost Light, they kind of vaguely mention the fact that, like, they mention Iron Fist, and they say, I could have saved him. And both of them are kind of, and it's this really somber moment that if you hadn't read Last Stand, didn't mean much, because Iron Fist wasn't really
sure,
a character.
He's
like,
just
he was
another
mentioned.
Guy.
Yeah. But I remember reading that moment and my heart broke. I just remember being like, oh God, somebody could have saved him. I loved him very much. Because his death is particularly, I mean, they're all super sad, but him dying after surviving is
right,
especially
yes.
sad. And, you know, we see Verity just sobbing over him, which I appreciate that she is affected by this. You know, I appreciate that she isn't this like super just kind of detached character.
Sure.
She cared.
She gets to experience things and feel things.
Yeah. And we get that from her, and we get, you know, the fact that she saved the information that Iron Fist had on him, and the fact that she, like you said, picks up kind of where he left off, at least a little bit, in, you know, carrying on what he was kind of writing out and what have you. So it's a little somber moment. But yeah, I just wanted to track back to that really quickly, because it was something we couldn't really dwell on when we were discussing the issue of More Than Meets the Eye. I think that was eight. No, I don't think it was even that far. Maybe it had only been five. Regardless. So you mentioned Pova. So let's hop over
right.
to that. Because what a brilliant way they handled discussing Pova twice.
Yeah. That was really well done. The
Super
idea
well done.
Of this heroic thing that ended up being
yeah.
the opposite of that.
Yeah. This really great, valiant stand. Like, because of course, yeah, we start and we hear it from Iron Fist's point of view. And, you know, specifically in how he wrote it in his Records Declassified kind of email blasts or whatever.
His newsletter.
Yeah. And it's even, you know, the art of it, it's all bright and just really crisp and beautiful
it's
and shiny.
Comic book.
Yeah. It's all very, and like we have Springer taking this heroic stand and insisting that Impactor take them by surprise by shooting through Springer.
You have to do it.
Like, you've got to do it. I know you don't want to hurt me, but we got to, this is how we're going to take them by surprise. So this is how we learn about Pova. We learn about Pova from Iron Fist's retelling of it, his very fairy tale romanticized version of Pova. And then a couple issues later, we get the real deal on Pova. And it's rough.
Yeah, he kind of begged not to be shot through.
Oh, and God, poor Springer.
Yeah, it was not a good look.
No, he did not have circuit dampeners or whatever that he insisted, oh, I won't feel a thing. No, he doesn't have those. So he felt it. He felt it when Impactor blasted right through his midsection. And then it just gets worse and worse. And, you know, because initially in the shiny version of the story, they're taking out Squadron X on Pova, and they get them all kind of handcuffed and detained. And they're like, okay, great. Now we can turn them in. And then they're like, oh, no, they got loose. We have to fight back. And that's the way the story
is
told.
The way it plays out.
Yes. But in reality, Prowl tells them,
like, nah, Pova sucked, my dudes.
Yeah, we can't arrest these dudes on Pova. Like, this, we can't do this. This is against the law. You have to legally let them go. And Impactor says, fuck that.
Yeah, I wanna shoot some dudes, and I'll shoot through my friend to do it.
Yep, he shot through Springer, despite Springer begging him not to. And
he has the prisoners, and he does them up execution style.
Yep, absolutely. And it's this really, it's really just sad and awful, and poor Springer. And we see even the other Wreckers kind of responding to it. Roadbuster and World can't even look. And Broadside and Rack and Ruin, I think is who it is. I don't have the pages right in front of me, are kind of, they're still looking. But just this attitude of nobody's going to stop him. And we learn in the extras, Roadbuster kind of gives away the fact that, like, none of them wanted to. They were so, like, Springer was the new Wrecker here. Springer was the only one who was still kind of, who would have stopped Impactor. And he couldn't because he had just been blasted through the middle. So, but even then, he was still trying to get to where they were being held to stop Impactor. None of the other Wreckers were. They all just let him do it. And so that's where it, and like, I don't know, this all gets so, it, you know, it's all very layered, and it's hard to, you know, it's hard to call the Wreckers heroes, and it's hard to call the Autobots heroes. And this is why I appreciate Nick and James in the way they tell stories, and kind of this new version of storytelling that they brought, maybe not new, but like this kind of tone of storytelling that they've brought to the continuity. Right. I appreciate it very, very much.
Well, in again, I'm just going to reference other things and say, clearly, this is, we can use this as an analogy. Mm-hmm. But in D&D, there's a concept, or at least in third edition, there was something where there's paladins, and paladins are these sort of righteous, upstanding, you know, they're devoted to a cause, and they carry out that. There's also something called the Grey Guards, which are paladins that have been officially sanctioned by whichever church or god or whatever that they're serving to basically go out and crack skulls. Like,
okay.
And that, you know, where the Grey Guards are inquisitors a lot of the time. They're, you know, doing a lot of the stuff that is brutal. Lawful good doesn't mean lawful nice type stuff.
Sure.
And that's, that again is very much a feel of what the Wreckers are, is they're these guys who, especially over time, don't have any regulations on them.
Yeah.
So they're going to keep pushing that until, like, if Ultra Magnus is going to turn a blind eye, let's use that to our advantage and start beating up prisoners and killing innocents or people who have surrendered and stuff, committing war crimes.
Certainly. And that's what I appreciate so much here, is that it, you know, because I think of Iron Fist's telling very much in the way that for the longest time, the entire Transformers kind of good versus evil was told. It was the heroic Autobots and the evil Decepticons. And that was it.
Rollicking and it was adventures. Like,
And so it was like Iron Fist was the one telling us the story, where now we have, it's way more gray. And we have Decepticons who are totally fine. And we have Autobots who are really not. And I appreciate that so much, because that's way more realistic. Which I know can sound like a goofy phrase to use in this story.
No, absolutely.
But you get what I mean.
Yeah, it's in terms of emotional depth and everything.
Yeah.
And so I think that what we have here is a classic case of, in college, my best friend at the time tried to, like, a huge horror movie fan, mm-hmm. and he tried to get me to watch Nightmare on Elm Street. Uh-huh. And the whole time I was like, okay, what, why is this? I mean, I get it. And the thing that, like, you have to realize is this is the first one to do that. Like, a lot of the stuff that you take for granted now, yes. this instance is the first yeah. time this is happening. Like, yes. for me, More Than Meets the Eye, and especially, like, Robots in Disguise when it first started, was all about, like, this is a world of politicking, and it's all, everything is shades of gray, and
yes.
no one is going to be entirely uncorruptible, and all these sorts of different things. And that, it sounds like, at least not all of that, but like a huge sort of perspective shift was introduced in this series, like
yeah.
that led to that being a common thing that is taken for granted now, which is why in a lot of this, I think I was taking it for granted that, like, all right, which these guys are assholes. Fine. Like, you know.
Which is a sign of progression, I think. Yeah. yeah. The fact that now it's like, oh, right. Because you've read More Than Meets the Eye. You've read Lost Light. You've read Robots in Disguise. You've been reading ongoing as it picked up again as a title. But
Until All Are One, especially, has Starscream as, you know.
Certainly. Yeah. So it really is this kind of new era. And I don't know. I certainly don't want anybody to, like, get on my case if I, like, call Last Stand, like, the start of that. But as far as, certainly as far as the records are concerned, I mean, obviously, like, it was a huge shift in, like, taking the whole heroic Autobot thing and being like, not necessarily. They're just as susceptible to corruption and, right, like, wanting to get their end goal as the Decepticons. It's just,
right.
it's a matter of which badge you're wearing.
And so that has led to what I think has become kind of a central question for me on the mm-hmm. show. And this is something we've discussed, and it's a lot of, like, well, we'll cover things that sort of address this, but, like, what are the Autobots at this point? Like, clearly in the old style, in the classic 80s stuff, like, they're the good guys and the
right.
Decepticons are the bad guys.
Right.
And now the Decepticons are this
right now it's
populist uprising who uses, like, in anywhere from, let's say, like, brutal methods, like
uh-huh.
the things that the Decepticon faction is a group of people fighting for freedoms who occasionally are exploited by parties within the group that want to use it for their own personal power. Let's see Overlord or Starscream occasionally or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are the Autobots standing for at this point, other than we think the Decepticons are committing atrocities and we want to stop that? Like,
well, honestly, I think the answer to that is that both causes have just blurred so hard that there's
yes,
kind
absolutely.
Of an arms race. Like, there really isn't that big of a difference, which is kind of, you know, the culmination of all of it. The culmination to what brings us to the death of Optimus Prime is that, you know, the thing that kind of stops all of it is this whole thing with D-Void and, like, them getting back to Cybertron and this great kind of beast being a bigger threat than either faction. So, right, at this point, it's kind of a cop-out answer, but they're really...
No,
like,
I
Megatron's
exactly,
Decepticons
like,
have corrupted to the point where, like, it certainly isn't this beautiful poetic...
right, exactly. It's
like,
not... It has not been a sort of equalist, you
no,
know,
No, not in a
whatever,
very, very long
for,
time. And that
exactly.
was kind of from the very start. Like, ideally, the idealist Megatron that... The once and future princely idealist Megatron. And we saw this happen in More Than Meets the Eye, you know, with what happens with him and Whirl. He turns from being like, I can do this peacefully, to being like,
right.
I can't do this peacefully. Whereas
yes.
Optimus takes the idea like, I also want what he wants, but I'm going to do it with a militia, but, like, peacefully. And it's just this, it's really the, I think, the exact same thing, completely scrambled and approached in different directions and with different means. And it's basically the same thing. That has always been my stance on
no,
the
yeah,
Autobots
absolutely.
And the Decepticons. You guys
down,
want the same
down
thing.
To,
you're just idiots.
What is it? Squadron X being
yeah.
the Decepticon wreckers?
It's basically, yes.
And
they're
so,
more fabulous looking. No offense, Wreckers. I love yes, you, but like, damn.
Not to veer too hard off of the book we're discussing, but like, I think that out of everything, we're probably closest to getting like. So with the Decepticons, there's this clear instigating moment of. There's a clear progression of there's this poet and he gets arrested and he gets beat up in a jail cell and he decides I need to use any means necessary to bring about equality in the universe, mm-hmm. Or amongst machine kind at least. I think the book that's closest to giving us like that timeline, like these distinct notes of progression, is the Optimus Prime book that's out right now. Because we are getting those flashbacks saying, like, Optimus, here I am as a cop. Clearly there's stuff later on with Shadow Play and the Senate and all of these sorts of things. But I want to see essentially what the foundations of the Autobots are. Like, why did these... Why do some of these people pick being Autobots over Decepticons? Like, and one of the people I was curious about was, like, Bumblebee. And we saw that. We saw why Bumblebee was. Because Optimus was his friend, because he was the one who helped him. Like,
and that's a big thing, too, is if, taking it all the way back there, is that, yeah, some people, it wasn't a big...
Right, it's not an ideological thing at all.
Right.
For some people, it's like, well, these are my team.
Couple million year war looming ahead of them. And they even say that in these extras, like, oh, this will be like a decade, who cares? And then we'll be done. We'll go back to life as we know it. And clearly that's not what happened. So a lot of people didn't know exactly what they were getting into. It was kind of like, yeah, choose your favorite team and then good luck. That's what you chose. And that's what it's going to be for a while.
And then
buy into the ideal, you know what I mean? Like, then you take pride in what you chose. And
yes. Yeah. You sort of develop what your faction is after the fact. Mm-hmm. And I guess that is what I'm interested in seeing, because we've seen a lot of people who, you know, in the flashbacks or whatever are like, well, I can't be a Decepticon, so I guess I'm an Autobot. Like,
yeah.
But it's tough for me to understand what the Autobots stand for, other than being opposition to the Decepticons. And I think that that's something that, like you said, maybe at this point doesn't really have an answer. Maybe that's something that can be explored by James and John and Sarah and Ygritte. Yeah, sorry.
Well, and I will say, because I'm sure some people might not be happy with me saying they're basically the same, for what it is worth, Megatron did have the Decepticons, and we've seen this in the comics, did become more of a, hey, we are going to take over the galaxy. We are going to essentially take other worlds and make them useful for...
Right, for mechanical life.
Yes, technoforming. And that's exactly, it goes with his like... his seven phase plan, and that gets of course brought up in Last Stand of the Wreckers.
Offhandedly mentioned,
so, and we'll touch on that a bit more here in a bit. So for what it's worth, don't worry everybody, yes, Megatron was definitely more of a, I'm here for mechanical life forms, I am going to use other worlds to my benefit, and yeah, it was kind of Optimus and the Autobots kind of trying to stop that. But you're not wrong, and that's where my mind always was, even all the way back to the 80s cartoon, was being like, then what is your goal then, besides stopping Megatron? And maybe that is it. Maybe it is just like, catch up to Megatron, be like, dude, stop, and then both of you make something better.
It's a group founded by a police officer, which, you know, the goal of the police
is inspired by Megatron.
Right, exactly. It's not saying like the goal ostensibly of police is not, I mean, I have my own political beliefs, but the goal of police is not an end goal. The goal is to just make bad things stop happening.
Sure. Like, try to
be around when, And so it's possible that like, that's what the Autobots are, is they're just a response team for when Decepticons do bad things.
And I think it's one of those things where you know, you can get your own kind of, you can find your own meaning in either faction and in what they're doing. So we're obviously, neither one of us is going to sit here and tell people, no, this is what Optimus Prime means. But I'm with you in that I think it is, that's at least what I've gotten the most out of the Autobots in any iteration, in any continuity, is that they're trying their best to just stop what kind of took off like a rocket as far as the Decepticons are concerned. Like, bring it back and just stop the expanse of it and try to bring some order back to everything, some peace and order. That's my impression. They don't have an end goal.
Uphold the status quo.
Or at least you just chill things out. Like, Megatron's end goal is techno formation, and then everybody gets busy and we start making babies, and like that's his goal, and Optimus is like, dude, stop. Like, that's his, those are their two goals.
There you go, everybody, pick a side.
There you go. Do you want to get busy or do you want to tell people to stop having fun? You choose.
And you know what, I think this, we rarely do this, but this might be a good place to invite listener feedback. Like, if sure. I want to hear what people think, like, what are the Autobots about? What is their mission, you know?
Yeah, and I'm with you. And I think this is where also, when I realized we should have asked people kind of what they wanted us to touch on, just because there's so much here. There's so much in these, you know, in this set of stories that we're talking about this week. There's so much that, yeah, I don't want this to be our only instance of touching on even this book in particular and the questions that it brings up. So for sure, like, be nice about it, for sure. Like, if you guys have input that you want to toss at us, get at us. Yeah, let us know.
Tweet at SoundWavCast and just put in hashtag Autobot or whatever. That'll be fun.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
If you need more space, email us at, I think it's soundwavcast@gmail.com.
That sounds right.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that'll be cool. But just because, right, this is our take on it. Like, and we're certainly...
And we're like, right, but if you want to embarrass
yourself...
We're
right 100% yourself, of the time. But if you're a goobus...
If you're a fool...
what did I say we were gonna... Oh, the phases.
Yes, yeah, the phases.
I did want to touch on that because this is more of the extras kind of stuff when we get into the text stories. Again, let me reiterate to everybody, things like DJD, like Phase 4, Agent 113, Rung.
Yes.
All very new things that I, on which I had no basis. So it's so, it was fascinating to me realizing that, like, you are going to go into these stories. You know exactly who the DJ, you know who the DJD really is. You know who Agent 113 really is.
Yes, you that was very Rung. Interesting to me. It made me realize, like, I realized way after the fact, I'm like, can he shoot guns? Is he able to, is Agent 113 able to shoot into the Autobot badge?
I think if he he wouldn't have been able to transform. Oh, right. At the time, yes. Because if you'll recall, he used to be
Boss. You're right. Yes.
He used to be one of them. And then they discovered him. And that's when he got turned into the pet.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert for anybody. I don't know why you would be listening to this if you didn't already know anything about the
DJD. Don't listen to this if you already know about the DJD. Well, and that was the thing that I going way back is like the final standoff between the DJD and Megatron. Overlord was there and I was like, why is he here? I didn't know about any of like Overlord's obsession. Well, I guess it had offhandedly been mentioned, but like in here we see he took over this planet just to get Megatron's attention.
Just, oh my god, he's such a daddy's boy and like he's so desperate.
Exactly.
He's so desperate for Megatron's attention.
And I had like, no so idea of like the extent of that when I was when we were at the very end of More Than Meets the Eye.
Sure. So I'm
and
sure
so I was just like
why
is this guy? Get him out of DJD's way. I want to see this standoff. But now I want to like go back and read that because I'm sure there's a lot of very interesting things to see in Overlord's confrontation with Megatron that I just don't remember because I didn't care the first time.
Right, right. Because how could you? Because, you hadn't read any of this. You didn't know that, Overlord.
He created Hell World.
Yeah, a bad, bad place, like a bad time place, like just real, real bummer town.
He got exploded from the inside out and turned into a fire zombie and then locked up forever.
Uh-huh. For a time.
Well, yes, for not nearly long enough. Like,
let's put him on a ship. But yeah, like, yes, Overlord, which that was, yeah, an interesting part too, was that, like, you already know Overlord's, like, backstory too. Whereas right. at the time, we didn't. We didn't have, which is why issue 14 of More Than Meets the Eye was so especially fascinating, was because we had seen these atrocities, these horrors that Overlord had already committed, and now we were finally getting a little bit of backstory to this pathetic, just excuse of a daddy's boy who just wanted Megatron's attention so badly. And why he is so just hung up on the idea that, like, either Megatron is dead or he isn't.
Right,
either Megatron is dead and never coming to check up on him, or he's alive and there's still a chance I can goad him into getting here. Overlord, what a fascinating, horrible character. Like, a good character, but, like, he's a terrible person. That's what I mean by that. I'm trying to think of other things that I just was like, oh, shoot, yeah.
Chief Tyrus, we see for the first time, supposedly.
In shadow, no less.
Yeah.
Because, of course, later on, you know he's covered in bore holes. Whereas at the time, we were just like, oh, there's a big dude.
He looks
there
big.
There he is. That's a big man. Apparently, he made the Tyrus Accord. Great.
Good
yeah,
to know.
We see him there. We see Nightbeat. We see Zaron.
Yes.
Which are characters who, of course, you know and love. Nightbeat. I've had to mention Zaron and be like, this is who that person is a couple times because he's
I remember
very much a,
he's, yeah. he's the lawyer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a golden boy.
That's
lawyer.
What I remember about him is that he's a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Single robot lawyer working for his client.
he's wearing sexy miniskirts.
Being self-reliant. We finished the reference, everybody. Yeah, there's like you said, there's Rung. There's so many things that
yeah.
are clearly like,
Rung
okay.
is a James Roberts character.
Original, yes.
Yeah, he's an OC of James Roberts. And so, of course, at the time, reading, like, Bullets, I didn't care who Rung was. And reading even, because I do believe in the first issues we were getting, we did get the, what are they called here? Sorry, I'm looking at my book, trying to get, they were called something. The, like, the little, like, rundown on each character.
The character profiles?
The
Autopedia. They're
Autopedia.
Personal yeah, Autopedia
data
entries.
Repository entries. And they have, like, rungs.
Yeah,
like
psych screening.
Yeah. And I was always like, I don't know who that is. Whereas now it's like, oh,
he
he's
must
a
be a
psy
guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, now we love Rung, and he's successfully saving a universe
mm-hmm.
and beating up the main character of our universe.
About to get into a little rumble with a little captain.
A rumble.
He's about to get into a rumble with a little co-captain.
So
yeah,
there you
we
go.
Have him. We have just so many things that rereading the text story, I was like, God, this all makes total sense. Why did I just breeze through this before without, like, that should give you an idea of, like, how I jump into things. I'm just like, I trust you. And I just keep reading. I'm like, this will probably pan out. And you know what, though? My faith has been rewarded. It does all pan out. So that's exciting. That's good, at least.
That's very exciting.
I'm trying to think of other things, other notes I have written down. Were you happy to see Shockwave? It's been a minute.
I was very happy to see. I miss Shockwave. I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we're right on the cusp of Shockwave coming back, especially
yeah.
with the Bumblebee stuff.
For sure.
There were a lot of very small things in here I was excited to see.
Okay, tell me about it, Stud.
The convert to Decepticon stuff was a good pun.
Yeah.
Calling Cup's cigar a cigar, good mm-hmm. pun. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of just very small little, like, okay, yeah, all right.
Like little winks.
Yeah, Prime Apothesis or whatever it is. Wreckin' Rule is very cute.
I love it, yeah.
One thing I think that we like, and we've even talked about this to James before, the one thing we like that James does seemingly more than anybody else
mm-hmm.
is he's willing to, like, get into like the biology and culture of a Cybertronian or of a Transformer. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's like very small, it's like an offhanded thing in the backup, in the, not even in bullets, but in Zero Point, mm-hmm. it's mentioned that the eyes of a Transformer are lit by the spark, like directly, that there's some,
which is very cool. A very
I think that's a really detail. Really, like, and it explains why a lot of bots have blue eyes and red eyes and these sorts of things. And but
and
the other
you know,
thing,
oh, that's how their spark looks, that's pretty.
Well, the other thing I really like about that is there's a whole bunch of times, there's even one in here when Iron Fist is getting information uploaded into his brain. This happens to Tailgate all the time, but energy will shoot out of a bot's eyes. And so now that has some kind of almost explanation that I can run with, is that like, oh, that's their spark overloading.
It's just like overworking. It's, it's surging. And so it's kind of escaping any way that it can.
I'm very
into
that.
That's a good point.
Idea.
I hadn't I think just in passing, I was just like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. That tracks. But no, very, very good point. And yeah, no, Zero Point is just so, so good.
Zero Point's really, really good. It's really, like, it's heartbreaking to see Roadbuster, right? That's his name?
Yeah, sweet Roadbuster.
Yeah, like learning to read specifically
so
that he can read to Springer.
Oh my God.
Because Rung told him, like, hey, if you read to him, it might help bridge this, you know, spark aneurysm that
which is an idea we see revisited in More Than Meets the Eye with Rung.
Right, exactly.
Himself.
So that's the thing that's nice, is we see these concepts not only introduced but revisited and built upon. Like, and the whole Conjux and Amica and Dura is example of that. Like, there's so many things that are like, hey, these people have been around since the beginning of time. They probably have some cultural things that are interesting to explore.
Yes. It gives us the impression that James has a very solid idea. Like, he's got very solid
ideas. He's been to Cybertron.
That's the only thing that I'm pulling from this, is that, yes, he's seen some stuff, and he's giving us details about it little by little. But yeah, certainly, Zero Point is so important, and I remember when we were first reading that, just being the most like, Buster, you sweet darling. you are learning how to read. When there's a specifically darling moment to me is when he can't pronounce,
like, malevolently or something.
Malevolently, and he like is trying, and then he holds up the book to Springer and is like, is that right? And I'm like, okay, listen, you're way too cute right now. Roadbuster, by the way, if people aren't that familiar with him, fucking huge. Like, this huge, massive, just, like, very intimidating bot. So it's especially adorable to imagine him doing these very, you know, small little things day to day to take care of Springer and to take care of him bidding hello to the coffins. Like, he says hi to Pyro and Rotorstorm and the twins.
He develops the routine.
It's so sweet. It's very, very sweet. And I remember appreciating very much that we kind of got this very soft, personal side to Roadbuster, because off the top of my head, he would not have been immediately who I would expect to, on whom to get some insight. So Zero Point is a very good, very important little story. And our first little hint that Springer might be waking up. And if you, if people are patient. I held on so long, I was like, he'll be back. And my friend Meg, every couple like months, would be like, he forgot about Springer. And I would be like, no, he didn't. Springer will be, I promise you.
The other thing I'm realizing now, looking at all the extras, there's a promo image that's it has a bunch of the bots with like sniper scopes. And says, on March 24th, one of these robots will die, which is a classic comic book thing. Like, you do that, you put like all the X-Men on the cover, and you say one of these characters will die. But it's especially funny now knowing that none of these characters mattered to anybody. It's just like these are just like a bunch of no names that people could barely detect the names of, let alone the faces. And like, oh, I guess if it's Cup, that might be weird. Like,
I guess potentially that's
a funny
it did matter, because that was for issue 3.
Oh, sure.
So maybe by that point, although I don't know, because Rose's still on here.
There's
did he die in 3?
I don't think so. It says issue 3 on it, so it's got to be 4 issue 3.
Gets killed.
But it reminds me of, there was a really, really good, like, pop art style book in the late 90s, I believe, called Ecstatics, and every single issue had one of these characters will die on the cover, and they would just kill somebody every issue. And it was just like a comedy, like, book making fun of that concept.
Sure. Well, because then, of course, also in comics, you're like, well, yeah, that
right, exactly. Like, yeah.
Like, oh no, I wonder who it's going to be. I did want to mention, I do have it written in my notes, the fact that they mentioned Grimlock, which specifically regards to Grimlock, we did talk about the fact that he used to be held in Garrus 9, and we get a little more insight here that... Overlord was like making him watch these battles, and you know, this just all these awful traumatic things were happening to him, which gives a little bit more insight to this kind of, I don't want to say a shell of Grimlock we have, because like he's there, he's just kind of
this recuperating,
kind of piecing himself back together.
And
he was there when Overlord took over, which is a very important detail.
Right. Yes. Is this was something that happened to him, and we even see they lay out like prior concepts for this, where like at one point in the book, there's, you know, a cool twist that like once you Overlord is offering people, like, if you win 12 fights and you get a choice, and the choice in the book is you can either die or fight me, which is die. Mm-hmm. But apparently originally that was supposed to be fight him or fight Grimlock, and that would have been fucking nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, still pretty much a guarantee that you would not survive, but a very cool twist on it.
And not only that, but they say that it was going to end with Overlord being thrown to Grimlock.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah.
Which I just... would have changed everything, because then we wouldn't have Overlord on the Lost Light. So.
Right. So, like, we see why certain decisions were made. Yeah. Yep. There you go. It would have been very, very cool. It would have been very cool to see this agency given to Grimlock. Because you get such... brutality out of these characters, because I think even I'm not gonna be able to think of his name off the top of my head, and sorry if you can like hear me pawing through my book here. Kickoff, we see Kickoff is, oh god, we haven't even discussed Fort Max is talking to Kickoff. Geez, at the very beginning, and then later, you know, after Overlord takes over, and by the time the Wreckers are coming in, we see Kickoff has survived, and he's the one that we see being given in the moment this option of, after winning 12 battles, so he is an Autobot who survives from the beginning of Overlord's takeover, and he just becomes this like brutal, like,
right, he goes full on like survivalist at any cost, kind of.
It's really, it says a whole lot, and it, I mean, bravo, you fucking sickos, James and Nick, I love you both so much. This is, what a fucking rough book to read, I will say that much. Speaking of which, Fort Max, now you have and again, we're coming at him from two different points too. When he shows up in More Than Meets the Eye, I was like, oh my god, look who's up.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, to you were like, oh, here's a huge man, I don't know.
Yeah, I was like, who is this? What a maximum fortress.
He is certainly
I don't think you could put more fortress in a individual.
Can't pack more in.
Yeah, he was just a guy to me. Whereas now I'm like, holy shit, they used him to brute force a door.
Yeah, he's been through some stuff.
Well, he did not look good.
No, because his eyes, of course, are all burnt out and everything. And we get little hints of it in More Than Meets the Eye, which I know when those issues did come out, I kind of lightly described, like, oh no, this dude, like, there's a reason
he's been through the shit.
Yeah, and we do see it here, even at the start, Overlord tossing him to the newly released Decepticons. Immediately, you're like, oh god, because if he's been the warden at G9 and suddenly all of his prisoners are out and Overlord's just handing him over, no, that's gonna be real bad. So now we get, or at least you have a clearer sense of, like, when he's flashing back and he's falling, and that's kind of what he was seeing when Rung was having his sessions with him, was he was remembering kind of being tossed to people.
that makes now
you
more
know
sense.
Exactly what was happening there. It was not good. It was real bad.
Not something anyone would want to relive.
No. But yeah, so, and then of course, yes, he was hooked up to try to get to Equidus, which I know Equidus even came up while we were reading More Than Meets the Eye. And man, that was an interesting trying to be like, okay, here, well, it's a judge. Kind of.
Well, it's funny now because after having read this, immediately I was like, oh, like from that one episode of Max Headroom. Like, whereas before I don't think I ever really understood what it is, but now I know there's an episode of Max Headroom that's very much about like, oh, there's like a computer that's a judge. And
I will trust you on that.
Max Headroom's a weird deep cut, but yeah, no, I feel like I have a good understanding of what Aquidus or Equidus, whichever it is.
Sure, I'm not sure exactly.
Is now is this sort of supercomputer that can calculate guilt. And they go out of their way to point out that it doesn't detect guilt, but that it can figure out by, it can essentially turn, man, I'm just talking about a whole lot of other media, but it can turn abstract concepts into raw numbers. And that, I at least appreciate being like recognized because I really hate the Kingdom Hearts series because it doesn't do that. It'll always be like, okay, so you have like heartless and bodies and they're separate things and you can detach a heart from a body and your friendship is this thing. And it's all like these abstract concepts that are all just taken as like obvious scientific facts that people should know. And it always makes me laugh. So the fact that there's a computer that actually is like, okay, this computer does that work for us. That is really cool to me. Thank you. Good job.
Well done. Well done, everybody. Yeah, no, that's a, it is, I mean, you're right. I guess I took it for granted. I did not think of it like that.
Yeah, it's just me ranting about some weird little thing. Yes, we see Aquidus later on, and I like that.
Yeah, it gets brought up later in James's writing. But like you said, it calculates or it weighs guilt or what have you, because it does say, like, in the extras, we learn that when Springer, like, we learn that the other wreckers, after Impactor just slaughtered Squadron X, they kind of manipulated Springer and were like, listen, we're going to get shut down. If we have to go on trial, we're all going to get shut down, because all of them knew that they were guilty of not stopping Impactor. And so they kind of convinced Springer by being like, hey, we want you to lead us. We trust you. And Springer is such a good boy that when he got up in front of Equidus, he could testify about what Impactor did. And it was so honest and convincing that they were like, oh God, we don't even have to hear from anybody else. You are so good and right that we trust you. Equidus believes you so much. And that's really why the Wreckers got to continue to be the Wreckers, was because the other boys used Springer and like
they got to put everything on him essentially.
And it worked, and they got to remain a faction and or what have you, a squadron. And so it's a very interesting concept, but knowing that like the testimonies were so damning and like this is what Prowl has been so, and that's what we learned was like a big plot point of Last Stand of the Wreckers, is that Prowl needs to get the testimonies that are on Equidus, because if the Decepticons get them first, which of course Overlord knew something was in there, which is why he was like
hooked up Fort Max to be like, hey, open this for us,
break
would you,
this
buddy?
Yeah, break this open, we got to get in there.
They point out that like having all this information known would be the ultimate propaganda weapon and turn the entire galaxy against the Autobots.
Yes, which, you know, yeah, you guys aren't that squeaky clean, are you?
I want you to say exactly what we just said very slowly. Think about it. Well, and I'm sort of flipping through the book as we talk here. Mm-hmm. And that brings me back to Iron Fist, and sort of what I like so much about Iron Fist is the panel I'm looking at. He's yelling at Perceptor, I think it is, and he's saying like, okay, Rotorstorm just got his head blew up. I thought this was just cool, fun adventures, good and bad. I thought that it was rollicking action times.
Yeah.
I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah. Iron Fist very much was for new readers, or at least people introed into this book, was very, I wouldn't say exactly, but similar to the way that, like, Tailgate is for new readers in
Right.
Meets the Eye.
I mean,
he's
the Kitty Pryde, where you're explaining everything sort of to this character. It's the viewer analog where we can say, oh, you didn't know? Let's expository.
You don't realize how bad the Wreckers are. Whereas, like, all the other boys had at least... I mean, obviously, everybody was a bit naive. Everybody's a bit green going into it. But they at least were... They knew what they were getting into. They chose
right.
to do this. Whereas, yeah, Iron Fist, especially being the fanboy that he is, had this very shiny idea of what the Wreckers were. Iron Fist's idea of the Wreckers is the same as my idea of most things, whereas I'm like, Overwatch, all those people hang out and have fun with their friends, and then they, like, go spar, and then they go and hang out some more and have s'mores. And that's how Iron Fist sees the Wreckers. It's like, yeah, we go and we save a planet, and then we go home, and then we have pizza.
The other reason I like Iron Fist so much is because, especially in the backup stories, James gets to use him as a tool to make fun of bad writing.
Yeah. Oh God, it's good. Yeah.
The whole bit about how every sentence has an adverb in it, and
he said tearsly. He said
he specifically points out use of the word grimly, which is one that a lot of people like making fun of, because it means nothing. it's just dumb.
So there you go. Yeah, it is. It's a very cute little jab there. And even in that story, yes, we have Skyfall this whole time, which even in reading the story, you're like, Skyfall's kind of a dick. Like, this guy is not a good friend, Iron Fist, my darling.
Well, it's interesting because, again, on the topic of, like, writing stuff, by this point, because I'm so far in and so far along and have been mm-hmm. on this ride for so many issues and words and pages now.
Years,
like,
at this point?
Yes, years. Like, I know James's tricks at this point.
Sure.
Like, I was able to pick up him, like, Skyfall's going to be an asshole, isn't he? Like, Skyfall's going to be a fucking piece of shit here. And the other thing I picked up was very early on, Iron Fist has his little seizure thing, mm-hmm. and I'm looking at him, and he's got, like, right
that
there
scar.
Is the hole on his forehead, and I'm
yeah.
like, there's something up with his brain, isn't there? Someone
yeah.
did something.
One of his bullets.
Yeah,
and it was someone. It was fucking Skyfall. So even going back to bullets, and regarding these backstories, did you catch the bit with... This is where it was a bit of a deep cut at the time, and it was a kind of a big deal reveal, at least to me, when it happened. In Rose's backstory, we have, you know, him at this academy, and he's got this instructor who is not a fan of his, and then gets a little bit more intense, and then
ends up just beating the shit out of him.
Yeah. Did you, and I won't
no
believe
the it. Answer is no to whatever I was supposed to be detecting. I was just like, that's it's, weird,
it's a deep cut. That was Whirl.
Oh, what?
Yeah, Whirl at one point mentions that he taught at an academy and he went by a different name, and then he ends up, like, all of a sudden up and leaving the academy.
Oh man,
and then when
no,
you pair
I
it up with
didn't.
Bullets, you're like, oh God, because he beat the shit out of Rotorstorm and left and then went by Whirl again. At least that is, I'm pretty sure that's pretty much confirmed. If I'm wrong, I apologize. I'm almost positive that's confirmed, though, which was another reason. So, like, I know there were moments when I'm sure you were like, man, she's really hard on Whirl. But I'm like, listen, he's done some really bad things to dudes I like a whole bunch. Megatron and Rotorstorm, I like those boys. So there you go. An extra little bonus content
now I know.
For you.
Great.
I know. It's not great. I know. Though, I mean, yeah, I mean, we love Whirl. I love Whirl. Like, he's, you know, that's just a little thing that I was like, oh, yeah, you might not notice that. And maybe other people listening hadn't noticed that before, but it's pretty...
there you go.
Suggested that was him. Yikes.
Now I know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So...
Rotorstorm probably had it coming then.
Don't do that. Let's not victim blame on this show. That is not a place that we want to go. And then of course we have Pyro, which I do love that, like, in Pyro's backstory, we do get that, like, that dude did do cool stuff. Like,
yeah, he was a cool guy.
Yeah. Cause of course we can't get too much of these characters in just the comic itself.
Sure.
So when we get to the text story, it does help us appreciate them all so much more. I was happy to see that. I was like, oh good. At least Pyro got to do some cool stuff.
He was the only one who I was, well, maybe not the only one, but like, I felt like, he makes sense as a wrecker. Like, he's not just some guy they picked up.
Well, and I'm glad actually you said that, because I wrote down this line. I really like it a whole bunch. Topspin, Verity kind of has a moment where she lashes out and she kind of, because they're like insulting humans or whatever. And she starts dragging Rotostorm a little bit, and it's after he's been killed. And she like stops herself and is like, oh God, I'm super sorry. That was messed up. Topspin says, I figure he'd been a wrecker all his life. He just didn't realize it. Which I really like that line. I was like, oh, that's a really good line. So I like this idea that, like, you know, like, wreckers are just made of certain things. And even if they're not part of the team yet, they're all made of this same kind of buildup, which is possible.
0.1%er type thing.
Yeah. Why Whirl still hangs on to it. And like, he, yeah. Which even what we have seen of Whirl in More Than Meets the Eye and Lost Light, it's like, well, yeah, that tracks. Like, the way that he handles himself and what he's done. That makes sense that he fits into this idea of kind of what a wrecker is. What parts of
right.
to be a wrecker?
He's made of wrecker material.
Yeah. Which in that respect, when it does come to Skyfall, because of course that's who Springer initially wanted, we learn. He wanted Skyfall instead of Iron Fist, but it's because of things that Iron Fist did. So right. then you're like, so was it, should it have been Iron Fist the whole time? And Prowl, without realizing it, kind of pushed things on the right track. Because even when it came down to it, we do learn that Iron Fist was brought on the team by Prowl specifically to be the sacrifice for Equitus. Because he knew that Iron Fist was dying. And then...
And he says, in his defense, he believes that he was giving Iron Fist what he wanted. Says that to Magnus at the end of the book, that he was giving him an opportunity to be heroic and to be with the Wreckers and stuff.
Sure.
And,
which, yeah, that makes sense. That falls into place there.
It did not quite turn out that way.
Right, because then when it came down to it, Iron Fist wasn't...
Yeah, he was like, oh, the Wreckers are a fraud, and...
Yeah, he was not so willing.
I have lost everything that I care about, and I have to die with that now. Great.
Great. And then, of course, we have the super tragic end to the Jumpstarters. I was so sad. Those
man.
Oh, God. It's so rough. Again, you sick, sick gentleman who wrote this book.
A whole bunch of people done gone got killed.
So much death. Just real brutal. Let's see. Looking through my notes, I'm wondering if there's anything. God, and of course there's a ton. I'm sure we haven't even
touched on yet. There's surely, you know, we could go into hours and hours of.
I know. We've already been recording for a little while here.
We're close to 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I feel. Are there any last notes of small things that are. I just want to say again how rad it is to have Overlord exploded from the inside out. Like, what a cool looking fucking Ghost Rider on fire robot skeleton he is.
It's, like, that is, of course, it's something you can certainly take away from this book. It is gorgeous. As if the writing wasn't enough.
Yes, obviously.
Nick knows what he's doing.
Very good at drawing robots, and
Verity
always looks good.
There's a reason why he was the one I paid attention to first.
So robots and humans, everything looks great.
Yeah.
The colors are great. Josh doing those. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's just
some Josh Burcham work there. Yeah.
Really great covers. I really like the cover to issue 4 with the sort of NWA, like, looking down at you. Whirl being in the group.
I was excited to see kind of this older lineup here on that cover. It's very cool. This was still a point of time when these books were coming out. Trevor Hutcheson was still doing covers for the Transformers books, and I was just in love with his artwork. He does that really kind of like
I call him the James Bond intro covers.
Oh, I always thought of them like, well, and this was because of All Hail Megatron. I would always call them the propaganda covers because during All Hail, of course, he was doing very much looked like kind of Soviet propaganda posters for Megatron, which was so cool. I'm a big fan of that flat graphic style. So, yeah, we get in the hardcover, you get a bunch of that extra. And, yeah, in whatever version we found.
Pick it up. Pick up the hardcover, people. It's worth it. This is foundational stuff that clearly was used in lots of things going forward, if you hadn't noticed.
Absolutely. It really is worth it to, get some insight, get some groundwork on things that now, right, you can just be like, oh, right, that's just a thing that's established. Like the fact that we see the numbers 113 and 332 show up 1,000 times in these books. We're just like, oh, yeah, I've seen those numbers before.
Yeah.
And yeah, Agent 113, the DJD, so many things that, again, at the time didn't mean much. Because this was my intro to James Roberts's writing. And like most people's intro to his writing.
Mine too. This is actually my first time reading stuff. And I think he's got a great future ahead.
Yeah. I think
I'm very excited to see him. Maybe he'll get an ongoing gig. Who knows? But
who knows? Yeah. There's a
chance. Keep an ear to the ground. Keep that name in your mind, chaps. Yeah. If you ever see this, Jim Roberts, I believe it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah. I think that'll wrap it up here.
Yeah. I think we'll kind of cut it there. I guess we'll wrap up by saying again, I'm sure there's a bunch of stuff that if there's something that we didn't get to in this set of stories that
too bad.
Tough. Deal with it. No, I don't have any, we don't have any like set plans yet, but certainly we'll be talking about the records again. So if there is anything that you really want us to kind of touch on or discuss, let us know. And whenever, we'll certainly get to Sins at some point. Hopefully we'll have Nick on the show at some point. That would be fun. That dude's all right, I guess.
Cool as heck.
Sure. But no, really, hopefully we can catch him. I know he's very, very busy. But yeah, we'll see. So this certainly isn't our last time talking about our good boys, our good...
It's too bad we're never going to talk about the Wreckers again.
they're gone.
Can't believe that gone. Truly it was their last stand.
This was it. This was the end. Hear from them again.
Yes, I'm very excited to follow up and see what's going on with these guys later.
We'll get back to it in 5 years, everybody.
Next week we have a single issue episode.
I believe so. Believe it is Optimus Prime next week.
I'll take it. Until then, I should pull up our Patreon page and thank those people.
Thank some lovely people.
They're super great. And they are not easily accessible because Patreon has a bad site design.
You sound like me when I was like, oh shoot, I'm running the show by myself.
Obviously, I'm a super big fan of our good friends David Cabrera, Jay Riley, Samuel Jocks, the fifth virtuoso Jacob Stevens, Kyle Schaefer, Bitty Bot Jazz, and Elizabeth Jackalope. Thank you guys so much for chipping in at patreon.com/soundwavcast.
Thank you.
And it's one of the other nice things is that all of our patrons are able to send us messages directly that we like to chat about in the after show, which is called Alt Mode, which you can listen to at our $5 a month level. It's a good old time.
It is. It really is.
So thank you guys again.
Thank you.
And Transforminauts.
Don't get any wise ideas from these Wreckers.
They're not role models.
I know. I see you hanging up that poster. I see you hanging up that Springer poster.
Transforminauts, take off that. Just because Cup smokes doesn't mean you can smoke.
Listen, take that eye patch off your eye. You are not Perceptor.
You're not Perceptor.